Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally, and I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky, and I'm not gonna hold.
Was Russell Watson and Faith of the Heart. I'm Teresa Chase, and you're listening to Until You Walk the Path, You Don't Know Where It Goes. Happy Thursday, everybody. It's a beautiful, sunshiny day in northern Michigan, and it is a wonderful day. I have with me today director, producer, and writer Jay Bryan. Jay, welcome to the show.
Greetings, Earthlings. How you doing?
Yeah, I am fantabulous. I became aware of you through two methods, Carla and Nikki Cipriano, and we are both on a website called Slated.
Yes.
So we also have some common love of horror films, at least.
Yes.
So could you tell my audience a little bit about yourself? How did you get into the industry, and what have you been working on, briefly?
Oh, wow. Well, quickly, I became interested in entertainment when I was probably in elementary school, actually. I did a Christmas play and got bit by the bug. I've done high school community theater ever since. I'm a writer. I started writing short stories when I was a teenager. Kind of got involved in that. I went to modeling school when I was about 19. Wanted to be a soap actor of all things. And then moved to Missouri and got into special effects makeup. Did some work like that for some of the local students at the local college, the media students. And then got into writing and made my first film in 2003.
Wow. A lot of the things that you mentioned could parallel me as well. My first dalliance into the entertainment industry was technically writing and producing this Western thing in that had to do with beginning of the U.S. In grade school, and it was horrible. But hey, I was like in the fifth grade. What do you expect?
Yeah.
These days, kids are a little bit more savvy, but back then, when the dinosaurs were alive. Anyway.
Yeah, we had to write your script on Sanskrit in the on tablets and stone tablets. Yeah.
And you don't dare drop those things because then you got to start all over. There's no eraser.
Yep.
So, you moved to Michigan to work on a Western movie, and that didn't pan out.
No.
But you stayed, and right now you're going to be working with Nikki Cipriano on Medal
mm-hmm.
of Honor.
Yes. Yeah, I came up to Michigan in 2012 to produce a horror Western, a zombie Western that I had written. That didn't pan out, like you said, and I spent the next year and a half struggling and try to take all that negative energy and turn it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
I took a lot of my own personal experiences. I spent a stint living in my truck, being homeless a little bit, and I wound up writing this script about a homeless Vietnam vet who comes to the rescue of a young girl who was kidnapped by a gang of kidnappers. And a Medal of Honor. And Nikki, when she came and auditioned for the movie, we had already auditioned quite a few ladies, and I really wasn't interested in. I didn't have my sights set on a child actor,
right,
if you will, because I didn't want to have to deal with child actors' parents. I'd done it before, and it wasn't fun. And I thought, well, there's no way I'm going to get kind of performance I need in this film out of a child actor anyway,
mm-hmm,
because they haven't lived what an adult has lived. They haven't gone through enough. So I figured, well, maybe I'll find a, because in the script, Molly, the lead female, she's 16. She's kidnapped by, she's a daughter of a bank president, very well-to-do guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kidnapped by a gang of thugs, and they take her to this abandoned building. And they're going to hold her for $100 million ransom. They're going to make her dad rob his own bank for the ransom money. This girl's got a lot of problems. Her mother died at the hands of a homeless man 10 years before this. And so there's a lot of teenage angst there. There's a lot of rebellion towards her father because she blames him for what happened to her mother and not being there to protect her and all that good stuff. So in the midst of all this, she's going through being kidnapped. She winds up finding her life in the hands of this homeless Vietnam vet,
mm-hmm,
the very person she despises, really. And, of course, Gunny, the vet, he's got demons of his own. His last mission in Vietnam, he inadvertently killed three children, and he's carried that with him all these years. When he gets back from Vietnam back in the 70s, his son is born, and his wife dies when his son is just 3 years old, leaving him to care for this child. But Gunny can't find a job anywhere. Nobody will hire him because of the war and him being the vet. So the state comes along and takes the child into custody. He becomes a ward of the state. So Gunny hasn't seen his son in 40 years.
Wow.
So there's a scene in the film, in the script, where Gunny has fought a couple of the bad guys. In fact, he's just about killed all of them. And he's been shot. So he finds Molly where he hit her, and she's helping him mend his wound.
No spoilers.
But they wind up telling each other their life story in this one little scene. And it's a very emotional scene. This was the scene that Nikki came along and auditioned for. And I had read, all the other ladies that read for the script were over the age of 18, in their early 20s. And Nikki came along and just knocked them all out of the park. She blew them all away. I was extremely impressed.
She did an audition tape for Never Can Say Goodbye.
Yes.
And the role was is actually a little bit older.
Okay.
Because, you know, Sarah Jane is, she starts off as a sweetheart. She becomes a mother. A wife, she dies in childbirth and becomes a vengeful ghost. And her age, you know, was a concern for me until I saw her audition. And she just blew me away. She handled those strong emotions so well.
Well, I had, when I put the sides up on the website at the time that we were auditioning, I think there were like 7 or 8 pages. And she had everything memorized. She had the entire thing memorized. And
mm-hmm.
not only did she deliver the lines, there was one particular line that she delivered the exact way I heard it in my head when I wrote it, that no other actress delivered it the way she did. And she cried when she needed to cry. And I was so mesmerized by just her audition. I mean, she almost had me welling up a little bit. She's extremely talented.
Yeah.
So.
She is going so far. And
yeah.
I am really blessed to be at the beginning of her career, because eventually she's going to be an A-lister, and she's going to cost money.
Yep, another Jennifer Lawrence. Yep.
Oh,
I'd be like, oh, I knew her. I knew her.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I see her being another Katharine Hepburn because she can do pretty much anything.
Wow. Well, yeah. Yeah.
So.
Her. Yeah. Very wide range she can do. And along with Nikki. Nikki was the first one that I wanted to try to get cast. Mm-hmm. I wanted to build a cast around her. I had an idea who I wanted for the lead, for the hero, but I thought, well, we're reaching for stars now and we're small potatoes. Because at the time, I thought about shooting this movie for maybe a $250,000 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We got money together and paid a line producer to actually budget out the script and schedule it. And he read it and he says, Jeff, this is a great script. This is a movie I would take my dad to see. I really want to work on this movie. I'm like, all right, that's cool. So we brought him on board actually as a producer. His name is David Dilley. He's out in L.A. Nice guy. And then one of my other co-producers, Keith Moncrief, he's out of Springfield, Missouri. Nice guy, very talented man, the brainiac of my group. And then there's Sarah Kessinger. It's funny, I mentioned Jennifer Lawrence a while ago because Sarah worked on Winter's Bone, which was I think it was Jennifer Lawrence's breakout role, really.
Okay.
The movie. That's my core group.
Okay.
And then with the cast, we started looking for our lead. We talked to Danny Trejo's people because we thought it would be really cool to see Danny Trejo as this homeless vet.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Henderson was also on the list, and we reached out to Lance's people. And, I mean, if anybody knows anything about the action and sci-fi horror films, they'll know who Lance Henderson is.
Right.
And for those of you out there who don't, watch the Aliens movies, and he is Bishop in Aliens, just in case you don't know who he is. But we reached out to his people. His manager got back with me. They read the script. They loved it. And so we have an unofficial LOI from Lance Henderson. So essentially what that states is we couldn't get one from his agent because we didn't have the money in escrow.
Right.
But, they said, well, you get the financing, you have Lance.
Like, yeah.
That's really cool. So.
The film industry is really challenged these days because the big studios make film look like they are unprofitable.
Yeah.
And it's because, this might be cutting my own throat, but, the studios are run by bean counters and pencil heads.
Yeah. No, not obviously it's cutting your own throat. I think what I'm probably going to say in this conversation will get me blacklisted before I even started in the industry. But
yeah. And the thing of it is, there is a lot of waste. And, the Johnny Depp movie, The Lone Ranger, is the best example. They wasted $275 million to produce a Western. And even with Johnny Depp attached, it shouldn't have cost more than $75 million.
Yeah.
But you've got all this waste in the studio films. It's almost like they're competing to see how much money they can piss away without bankrupting themselves.
It's all garbage. I am not a big fan of remakes at all. I can't stand a remake. And all my friends, people I work with, they all know that. I hate remakes.
I loathe them because you're stealing somebody else's work.
Yeah, now I have to give props to a few remakes. When I was growing up, like John Carpenter's The Thing,
mm-hmm.
that was a remake of The Thing from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good movie. It was a good remake. But at the time, it had been a while. I think Things from Outer Space was a 50s movie, I think it was. So when he did it.
They upgraded the story as well.
Yeah.
One of the projects on my slate, down further on the road, is Swamp Rats. And
mm-hmm.
Swamp Rats is to the Magnificent Seven what the Magnificent Seven is to the Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
So you take the concept
mm-hmm.
and you make it your own.
Yeah.
Like the Dark Shadows movie, it was horrible.
Yeah,
and they didn't follow the tradition, the story, and they made it a comedy instead of a gothic horror.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't like about when they did 21 Jump Street. Mm-hmm. I probably get hung for this one, but I didn't like 21 Jump Street. I thought it was garbage because I grew up watching the show and it was not comedy. It was not. When I heard they were making 21 Jump Street, I thought, oh, cool. Maybe they'll do better than what they did with Miami Vice, because Miami Vice sucked too.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought 21 Jump Street was even worse than Miami Vice the movie was. It was just terrible. I was not impressed. And then you got, if I ever make it into the industry, when I do, and I get out to L.A., Will Smith would probably dot me in the eye for this one, but The Karate Kid was one of the worst remakes ever made, and it never should have been done.
Yeah.
Never should have been touched. Why touch it?
Yeah.
So.
But the thing of it is, there are so many stories to tell, and I don't want to retell old stories. I want to work with the actors who made those stories great, those films great.
Yeah, exactly.
And
there's so much talent outside of Hollywood that, we all know this. We all know the talent lies. It doesn't lie in Hollywood anymore with all the remakes and the comic book movies and everything. And I could go on and on about this and start a whole war between the fanboys. But you got to be fearless. Who cares?
But the changes in the industry with everything going digital.
Yeah.
It has reduced the distribution cost by over 75%.
Oh,
so it has opened up screen time to independents.
Yeah. Well, and that along with self-publishing and POD publishing and stuff like that, too, it also opens up to people who have some of the worst writing, worst grammar in the world putting out books. And I was reading an article not too long ago about that because I'm putting out my own book here pretty soon. Maybe it's going to be crap. Maybe it is. Who knows? But what the article stated was that the print-on-demand, the self-publishing whole trend has turned off a lot of readers because they'd rather stick now to the big names that they know rather than give the small guys a shot because there's so many small ones out there that have just no writing ability whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just because you can make an omelet doesn't mean you should open a restaurant,
Exactly.
Just because you can string a couple of words together doesn't mean you should write a book.
To be honest, my books need – I've got two books in print, Awakening the Dragon and Dragon Domain. The story is aces, but I need an editor to go through them again.
Yeah.
Because with video and audio and music, I'm aces. Mm-hmm. But I've got this strange thing in my head where I've got an autocorrect. So – I see it the correct way. It's hard for me to catch errors.
Oh, yeah.
Because I automatically see it the way it should be.
Yeah. I've got I have a collection of short horror that I'm working on putting out this year called Brain Matter. And I've read every story probably 10 or 20 times, and I catch something stupid that I missed every time I read one of them. So it's a matter of hiring somebody else to come in and read it.
Yeah. And it's hard to fix your own work anyway.
Yeah.
But, it's just the idea that there are so many stories to tell.
Yeah.
Why go and redo something that somebody else did? A while back I heard, somebody was going to try to remake The Birds and, put all the fancy special effects. Alfred Hitchcock did it perfect the first time.
Yeah.
And, special effects doesn't make a new product.
Well, I think they've had a remake or two of Birds, two updated versions back in the late 80s or something that somebody did one. It was horrible. But just leave well enough alone. I mean, I don't know. It's just the way I feel about it, even with the CGI and the technology, if the story warrants technology to the point where, having the technology now could tell the story better, maybe, but still, go out and tell your own story.
Yeah. A true entertainment professional, whether it be a writer, director, producer, actor, if you are good at your craft, you can do minimalist with crappy equipment and still tell a good story.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group that does Shakespeare in the Park every summer in Traverse City. And they have minimal costumes, minimal props, no sets.
Yeah.
So within 5 minutes of the curtain going up, you forget all that because the material is so good and the actors are so talented that you forget all that. You get involved with the story because they are good at what they do.
Exactly. It's funny, too, that we're talking about remakes, though, because I had always had this idea to write a Sanford and Son movie. And,
okay.
take the concept. I wrote a treatment for one several years back, but never did anything with it.
But, you know, it could be, you could make it, you know, John Brown and his daughter. You don't have to redo the same product to build on the concept and make it.
Yeah, but it's still Sanford and Son.
Well,
it would still be Sanford.
But Sanford and Son was classic. You can't.
Yeah.
It was perfect. You can't do better than perfect.
I think that if there was a Sanford and Son movie to be made, Eddie Murphy would be my first choice to play Fred G. Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
And Dulé Hill would play Lamont.
Yeah.
Dulé Hill, he's from Psych.
Oh, yeah. Dulé, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's also a great poker player.
Really? I didn't know that.
But, you know, it's just the idea that there are so many stories to tell.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to put it in current day. If you really wanted to do that concept, back in the Depression era, there were junk dealers that traveled. So instead of putting them in current day and giving them a set building, you could put them on, make them one of these junk dealers and doing the traveling circuit and all about all the people they meet.
Yeah, there are kinds of different ways you could probably approach it. So
there's a lot of, you know, a lot of ways to do it. But, wow, the half hour
is
almost over.
Really?
Yeah. So for Medal of Honor, what do you need?
I've got almost everything I need now. I've got a great cast. You got Nikki, of course. Lance Henderson, hopefully attached to it once we get the financing. Al Snow. Anybody who knows anything about wrestling and the professional wrestling world will know who Al Snow is. He's going to play our bad guy, our leader of the gang. A lot of local talent, people that that are probably instantly recognized here in the area. My DP is Dave Brewer.
Okay.
David Brewer, he was the DP for the movie Insidious
back
in 2010. And I worked on a horror film called Lake Erie down in Monroe in 2013. I played a monster. And Dave Brewer was a DP on that set. As a matter of fact, Al Snow was the leader of the monsters, I guess you could say, in that movie. That's how I met Al.
Okay.
And so I got a hold of Dave Brewer. He read the script. He loved it. And said he wants to work on the movie. So, I mean, everybody's excited about doing this. And the one thing that we need really the most is distribution and financing. So
yeah.
We got a $1.3 million budget. Got a 26-day shooting schedule. We plan to shoot in the summertime. So we're actually coming down to the wire here trying to get everything together. It's coming together a lot faster than I expected, than any other project I've worked on anyway. So I think this one's it's gonna be a good one.
Okay.
I think it's written in the stars for this movie. It's coming together pretty quick.
Do you have a crowdfunding campaign going for a startup or?
We did have a Kickstarter. I'm not a fan of Kickstarter only because there's so much. It's laden with so much crap now. It's overwhelming how much garbage is on. And not that what I have is, you know, the shining star, because if it was, it probably would have got money. But when we put it on Kickstarter the first time, we were competing with people like Spike Lee and everybody else, guys from Hollywood. It's like, you're Spike Lee. What do you need Kickstarter for? You're a Hollywood player. You know, you're taking the attention away from the small guys. And then also at the same time, there was a guy on Kickstarter who put up a campaign to make potato salad. And this guy, there were so many people all over the world who gave money to this guy just because they thought it was so quirky. He wound up raising, $100,000, something like that, almost $1 million, I think it was. I could be, you know, exaggerating the numbers there, but it was a big number that this guy raised just because he said it was going to make potato salad. And I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm getting off of Kickstarter. I do have a GoFundMe campaign.
Okay.
So actually, you can look for Medal of Honor. It's M-E-T-T-L-E, by the way.
Okay.
It's M-E-T-T-L-E of Honor, because the title refers to your strength of character.
Right.
And it actually applies to Gunny and to Molly, because Molly turns out to be the hero in the movie, just herself. There are a lot of demons that she has to fight herself to make that transition to character.
Yeah.
So.
Just one of the things about crowdfunding that you touched on that I think needs to be explored really quickly is that there are so many campaigns, and a lot of them are just crap.
Yeah.
That, you know, I've had investors suggest, well, you know, do a crowdfunding campaign, show me that there is an interest, and then I will come on board. There are so many campaigns that everybody's getting a little bit.
Yeah.
And so if investors are looking at crowdfunding campaigns as a measuring stick, you need to find a new stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are so many projects, and
Well, of all the ones that have been successful, for every one I think that's successful, there's probably 100 or 1,000 of them that are still looking for money and never make it.
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, and one of my connections I was talking to, he said, forget about all the crowdfunding. He said, you need to go through and do this legally. Do this the right way. Do it the only way to do it is to go find your investor, put together a good business plan, find your investor, and do it the right way, because that's where you're going to find it. You're going to struggle for years on Kickstarter to find somebody comes along and raises the money you need. And he's right, because this isn't the only project I've had on Kickstarter. I've had the Dead Reckoning was the zombie Western that I was going to do up here. We put that on Kickstarter, and I had a TV actor actually attached to that one, Jason Carter. He was the star of the film. He got a huge following, even on Facebook, like 3,000 or 4,000 people. And we only raised maybe $100 out of the $150,000 that we were looking for.
Yeah.
So it's not about, who can see your project. It's all about, who's got the quirkiest project out there, who wants to put money behind the quirkiest project.
Yeah. How can people reach you? If there's an investor listening, consider both our projects, but how can people reach you?
Get a hold of me, Brian, producer. It's the letter J, B-R-I-A-N, producer, @yahoo.com. They can also go to medalofhonormovie.com. It's M-E-T-T-L-E of honor movie.com. When you get to the page, you'll see the main page there. There's also a teaser trailer on the main page. There's a cast list. You can go to the cast page and see who's all so far listed there. There's a synopsis page. And then there are two pages also on the website. One of them is investors only, and the other one is distributors only. And they're both locked out with passwords. And I'll just go ahead and throw out the password now. It's all caps. It's M-O-H. Movie 2015. So MOH movie 2015, all caps. They can get into it. The business plan is there on that page, and the spec script is there, so they can download both of them and read them both.
And if you're into occult horror, Never Can Say Goodbye is the best way to find it is on Facebook. Never Can Say Goodbye. When Love and Hate Survive Death, which is one of our, basically our tagline. But we both have really good projects. And independent, you're more likely to at least break even with an independent than with a studio film.
Yeah. There's more heart involved in the independent film.
Yeah.
A lot more heart.
And we don't waste money on egos. Jay, thank you for being on the show. I would love to host you again. We can talk more about what's going on. And
It sounds like fun.
I'm going to have John Parr sing us out with St. Elmo's Fire. And after the music plays through, I will be calling you back.
Oh, you got it. All right.
We'll talk to everybody soon.